What is poppin', everybody? Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network. It is our week two preview podcast. So we're getting you all set for NFL DFS here in week two. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a writer for NumberFire.com. Joined here, as always, by Brandon Gadula. He is a writer and editor for NumberFire. Brandon, week one is in the books. We are on to week two. How you doing?
I am doing a lot better now that Stephon Diggs and Sam Bradford did what they did on Monday night. Yeah. Sunday went well. His week one, so I had too much exposure to guys I didn't like because I was afraid of the uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Sunday didn't go as expected, but Monday night with that Monday night hammer definitely helped out.
Yeah, Adam Thielen going for like $150 was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me in my entire life. I think that's a super exaggeration.
Well, he's going to get that same matchup as your boy Chris Hogan this week.
Yes, so yes.
That might be the best thing that ever happens to you.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even make that connection. Here we go. And I will be talking about that old boy, Chris Hogan, later on for sure. If you missed our week one recap podcast, that is up on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app as well. Check it out there. We went through snap counts, targets, deep targets, red zone targets, all of that for week one to recap things. We'll go through quite a bit of it here in the trend section later on. But if this is your first time listening to the Heat Check podcast, we start things off with injuries. We'll look at some relevant ones for this week. We'll go through four separate trends apiece that will have an impact on our lineups for this week. We'll take a look at some interesting games based on Vegas lines, whether it be a spread, whether it be an over-under, some line movement we've seen, stuff like that. Go through weather, not a whole lot for this week there. And then finally, we'll close up shop with our positional plays. Two quarterbacks, three running backs, three wide receivers, two tight ends, a kicker, and a defense that we like. So stick around for that as it is at the end. But Brandon, are you ready to get this week two podcast a-crankin'?
Yeah, but knowing what our first injury is, I'm also kind of not.
Yeah, let's just skip the podcast, to be honest. I forgot about that. Yeah, David Johnson is on injured reserve with a wrist injury. Oh, boy. Football sucks sometimes. The team signed Chris Johnson, CJ ? K, but he's expected to work behind Kerwin Williams as the early down back and Andre Ellington as the third down back. And Brandon, there's clearly value here. Kerwin got priced up, but Ellington's still down there. Are you targeting any of these guys in week two?
No way. No. There's no chance.
With the way the Cardinals offense looked on Sunday, I can't stomach a running back. Like, I'll talk about the receivers later, but regardless. And speaking of that, the Cardinals also lost their left tackle, DJ Humphreys. He's out for a few weeks with a sprained knee. It means John Wetzel will play left tackle. He was there a bit last year. Didn't do well, but he was there. Jared Valdir is going to stay at right tackle. He was another guy who played left tackle last year because everyone played left tackle for the Cardinals in 2016. How does this impact your view of Carson Palmer in a juicy matchup with the Colts?
I mean, I'm still on him a bit, mm-hmm. even though he let us down so badly in mm-hmm. week one against the Lions. The Colts got shredded in week one by Jared Goff.
By the best quarterback in football. It's okay. Understandable.
I mean, I don't think we can write off Carson Palmer just yet. And I know that he kind of had some fatigue at the end of last year, but they're going to have to throw without David Johnson.
I agree, and I am on him this week as well. We'll talk more about him later. Danny Woodhead out 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. Went down early in week one on the first drive. Still, I think, tied for the team lead in receptions, of course.
I think he's leading.
Yeah, is he? Okay, cool. That's awesome. Great offense, Ravens. Buck Allen and Terrence West combined for 40 carries in that game, with Allen receiving the most work. We'll return to that one a little bit later on. Allen Robinson out for the year due to a torn ACL, unfortunately. Torn early in week one as well. Big talent loss for the Jaguars, and I love to focus on surrounding talent when picking my running backs. Brandon, does Robinson's injury change the way you view Leonard Fournette at all?
A little, but it was clear that they want to feed Leonard Fournette and mm-hmm. not throw the ball at all. And Marquise Lee actually did a good job of stretching the field. He had four deep targets, one of which was a pass interference call. I'm not that concerned about the loss of Allen Robinson. It's sucks because I like Allen Robinson as a player, but I still think that the volume for Fournette's going to be there.
Yeah, Marquise Lee was kind of really good last year relative to Hearns and Robinson. So yeah. I like him as a player. I just hate this offense. So it is a downgrade to me for Fournette from an efficiency perspective. The Colts' woes continue. Andrew Luck will not play this week. Ryan Kelly, their center, and Vontae Davis, their cornerback, are still week to week. Neither practiced on Wednesday. Now, on top of that, right tackle Denzel Good is on injured reserve. He played every snap in week one, so the reasoning there isn't clear, but still, woof. We saw the Rams' defense go off against the Colts last week. Does this force you to consider the Cardinals' defense?
Yeah, I think it has to.
Yeah.
That offense is going to be a mess. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be, whether it's Scott Tolzien or Jacoby Brissett, mm-hmm. but Jacoby Brissett just came to the team a few weeks ago. Scott Tolzien, clearly nothing to worry about. Actually, I might prefer that Tolzien just plays. I don't know, but Arizona is definitely on my radar.
Yeah, for sure. And Brissett was a former third-round pick who was a third stringer. I know it's behind Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo, but still, you can't get a huge upgrade there. Patriots linebacker Dante Hightower, Brissett's former team. Hightower didn't practice Wednesday due to a sprained MCL. He suffered in week one. Very possibly misses this week's game. More on that in a little bit. They also could be without receiver Danny Amendola, who did not practice on Wednesday due to a concussion. And we haven't gotten much news on Amendola since Thursday, so he's a bit of a mystery. I would assume he is sitting this week. Brandon, if Amendola sits, what does that do to your view on the Patriots receivers?
It puts me more on Chris Hogan. I should move inside, like I alluded to at the top. That's where Adam Thielen ran wild on the Saints. And I'll mention this again probably a few times throughout the podcast, but Patriots lost the opener. They're 0-1. They're at risk of going 0-2, but they will have had 10 days to prepare for a team that's playing on a short week because they played Monday night with the Saints. So this New England offense should have a lot going for them. So I'm not worried if Amendola doesn't play.
And on top of that, the Saints are without their, or expected to be without their right tackle, Zach Strief. Go Cats this week due to a knee injury. Got rolled up on Monday night, and Strief is a tremendous run blocker. And they're already without left tackle, or Taron Armstead, who wasn't at practice on Wednesday. There are a lot of things going on here, Brandon. I love the Saints at home, but does Strief's injury make you start to worry about the Saints' offense?
I mean, I've been playing Drew Brees at home for forever.
As you should.
Whether I knew about offensive linemen or not. So I don't want to talk myself out of a great play in week two. Should I be worried?
I would say more worried about, I would avoid the running backs altogether, because that's where Street eats, is as a run blocker. So
Good.
I don't want any of the running backs.
Not even like Kamara and a negative game script.
Nah, Saints are going to win anyway, man. Packers didn't have right tackle Brian Bulaga at practice on Wednesday. Bulaga missed their week one game. It sounds like he's dealing with an illness now, which is interesting. If Bulaga can't play, how do your thoughts on our boy, who we'll talk about plenty, Ty Montgomery, change?
I don't know, Jim. I'm not the offensive line guru of the two of us. How much should it change if Brian Bulaga is unable to play?
With Bulaga out last week, I decreased my exposure to Ty Montgomery, which didn't work out that well. So it's a better matchup this week. We saw his usage last week. He's just too underpriced for me to care. So it's a downgrade, but whatever. He's too cheap. Aaron Donald practiced on Wednesday with the Rams after ending his contract holdout last week. Should put him in line to play week two against Washington. And Brandon, we saw the Rams defense go nuts last week. Washington's offense has struggled ever since the preseason. Are you thinking of going back there again this week?
I think you can make the case. Mm-hmm. Washington has no running game to speak of, really. But I don't know. I think that there are a lot better, safer options. There's Seattle, Oakland, huge home favorites. Baltimore is an 8-point favorite over the Browns. Arizona, like you said, I think we can make the case, but I think we could also make the case that the Rams will be chalky mm-hmm. because of what they did. So I'm fine not having any exposure.
And that's my big concern too, is the chalk. So I will avoid there. I really don't like chalky defenses. Thomas Rawls looks like he'll be able to play this week for the Seahawks. Head coach Pete Carroll said earlier in the week that Rawls would play after missing week one. Rawls also practicing in full, as he did last week too, which made it interesting that he sat, but we'll talk more about them later on. And finally, the Bears placed linebacker Jarrell Freeman on injured reserve with a pec injury and a concussion. Team has some talent up front. They've invested a lot there, but it's certainly is a hit to lose Freeman. Brandon, what does this do to your interest in Jacquizz Rodgers as a home favorite coming off of a bye week?
I don't know if I'm going to have any Jacquizz Rodgers. He's much more of a season-long play. Mm-hmm. If I have him and I drafted him and I need running back help, I'll play him, but I don't really think I want to target this offense necessarily, even against the Bears. Is that dumb?
I don't want to target this game because the pace could be horrendous. So I will have Jacquizz. I'll have exposure to him, but not a heavy amount. And I think that I have more now because Freeman is out than I would have had before. Now, before we get into the trends for week one, a quick reminder, NFL season is now here. If you want to keep track of all your lineups during week two, as the games are going on, make sure you catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. And remember, you can also find all of Number Fire's podcasts on TuneIn just by searching for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. We got this podcast. We also have JJ Zacharyson's Late Round Podcast is in there. He had his 15 transactions column from earlier in the week. His start sit is in there today. And then also tomorrow, we'll have a mailbag podcast. So search for Late Round Podcast on TuneIn or the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Tune in again, your everything audio app. Let's dive into the trends for this week. And we are going to focus heavily on the two big games between the Saints and the Patriots and the Packers and the Falcons because they have stupid over-unders. So, Brandon, let's kick things off here with the New England Patriots. We saw Mike Gillisley go off in week one, and that's because the Patriots love to run in the red zone, which is your first trend.
Yeah, I mean, if you're new to NFL DFS this year and you just play season-long, you might not really be tapped in necessarily to the Patriots' red zone rushing rate, which doesn't seem like they'd be a team that's run heavy in the red zone with Tom Brady, but they certainly are. On Thursday night in week one, the Patriots ran 19 total red zone plays, pass and run plays, not including extra points, field goals, stuff like that. In 2016, just six teams saw more than 10 red zone plays per game. And the Saints led the league with 12.4, just for some context. We can't really expect that to continue all season, but this week, who knows? And there are also definitely some red zone takeaways for sure. Of New England's 19 red zone plays, 5 were passes, 14 were rushes. So that's a 26-74 split percentage-wise. In 2016, the Patriots were the second most run-heavy team percentage-wise on plays in the red zone at 57%. So they were higher in week one than they were last year. But only the Bills at 59% ran more frequently inside the red zone in 2016 than the Patriots did. And again, you might think that has something to do with Tom Brady's four-game suspension to start the year last year, but their rate from week five onward when Brady returned was still 56%, tied for third highest. And in week one, Mike Gillisley drew 8 of the team's 14 red zone carries, a 57% share. James White, normally a receiving back, he had 6 red zone carries, 43% of the carries. And inside the 10, Tom Brady attempted just one pass. Gillisley had 6 carries. James White had 3. We know we want exposure to this Patriots-Saints game, especially if Dante Hightower misses. That'll just exacerbate how beatable these defenses could be. It's just more points for the Saints to score. But the Pats historically will be run first in the red zone. Should our exposure be in these running backs to take advantage of the touchdown upside? Just how are you approaching this game overall on the Patriots side of the ball?
I guess my exposure so far has been more so in the passing game, specifically Hogan and Cooks. Gronk will be in there too. And it may draw me towards James White. I think that red zone usage that you mentioned for White is encouraging there. I think that going back to last year, what we saw was that the Saints defense got pretty good against the rush once Sheldon Rankins came back. You know, we saw Dalvin Cook do some things against him last week, which was, I think, it does change the way I view this a little bit, but I don't know. I think I'm more tempted to go White here. White or the receivers. Are you honing in on Gillislee at all?
Yeah, I'm worried about the ownership because of the 3-touchdown night, but I'm also worried about missing out on a high point total. And if, you know, like I just mentioned, if the Patriots are in the red zone, they want to run the ball, they're going to give it to Gillislee, and he's going to score touchdowns. And we need touchdowns on FanDuel because it's not a full PPR site. I think James White makes more sense in negative game scripts. It's always hard to get inside the mind of Bill Belichick when it comes to running back usage, but I think I really have to take a long look at Mike Gillislee.
Yeah, I think you do too, and I will be looking at him. I'm having a hard time deciding how hard I will go because there are a lot of guys who I like who will have double the snap rate of Gillislee. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Will they have double or even close to the expected red zone carries or top 10, like inside the 10 carries as a guy like Mike Gillislee in this matchup?
It's interesting. Probably not. So I think it depends on what you're favoring. And on FanDuel, like Brandon says, we want touchdowns. We need touchdowns. And so that will certainly play a factor. I'm not sure where I'll wind up here right now, but I open initially as preferring White over Gillislee. And the reason I may prefer White, Brandon, is because negative game script is always a possibility when Drew Brees is at home. And the Patriots last week didn't look like a top 16 defense with Alex Smith just absolutely shredding them to pieces, but they had a pretty decent pass defense last year. They were 11th based on number fire schedule adjusted metrics, and with Stephen Gilmore now in the fold, you may be inclined to look away from Drew Brees this week. To me, that would be a mistake. Brees had similar situations last year at home against good defenses. Four of the Saints games in the Superdome were against top 16 defenses based on number fires metrics, giving us a decent sample, and Brees absolutely shredded them. In games against the Panthers, Seahawks, Broncos, and Buccaneers, Brees passed for 465, 265, 303, and 299 yards respectively. In those games, he averaged 23.35 points per game on FanDuel, and again, that included the freaking Broncos. They're a whole heck of a lot better than the Patriots, even with Gilmore. Brees' success rate in those games was 60.13%. That means he increased the team's expected points for the drive on 60% of his dropbacks. Matt Ryan led the league in that mark last year at 54.64%, and Brees blew him out of the water. Basically, the dude is matchup proof for home. We don't even know this will be a matchup, a bad matchup, based on the way the Patriots played in week one, and I want a piece of that. So, Brandon, if you had to go Brady or Brees in this matchup, which side do you prefer?
I mean, in cash games, I don't want to get cute. And as much as I'm okay rolling the dice with some lower-priced options, like a Jared Goff or Carson Palmer in tournaments, I want to pay up a quarterback, and I'm going to do it with Tom Brady. As I mentioned, I mean, the Patriots will have had 10 days to prepare for this game after getting trounced in that opener. The Saints are coming off a short week. I'm paying up for Brady in cash games. As for tournaments, Brees not only has, you know, Brady in the mix, but also Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan. His ownership should be low or at least held in check, especially with Ryan being the cheapest option of the four on FanDuel. If people are off of Brees or worried about Brees, I will be significantly overweight on Drew Brees in tournaments, but in cash games, I'm still going with Brady.
Yeah, I think for me, it'll be split exposure between Brees and Ryan as my top two guys this week. I'm going to have tons of both. I want that safety and that upside of being at home in a dome against allegedly bad defenses. Maybe not with the Patriots, but for Brees, that doesn't matter. So I'm going to have a lot of those two guys, so let's talk more about Matt Ryan here, Brandon. By focusing on the Falcons in your second trend, and Julio Jones in week one didn't do a whole lot. I was interested to see what he would do, but the Bears bottled him up. So your second trend is on Julio Jones' market share in week one.
Yeah, I was pretty in on Jones in week one against the Bears, just, you know, despite knowing that they can tamp down top wide receiver production. I just felt as though the front seven was strong enough to limit the run game and that Jones would be fed targets. That was not the case. Now, Atlanta trusts Green Bay in this Sunday night hammer throwdown fest game. and we're going to want exposure. The question is, you know, whom can we target with safety? I want it to be Julio Jones, but I'm not as certain as you might be. Jones played 81% of Atlanta's snaps in week one, tied with Mohamed Sanu's rate. Sanu saw 9 targets to 5 for Jones. Taylor Gabriel even saw 4 targets on 53% of the snaps. So he got a target on a higher rate of his snaps at around 13% than Jones did at 10.4%, which is understandable given the difference in snap count. But Sanu was at 18.8% in week one. Tevin Coleman even out-targeted Julio Jones with 6 targets on 41% of the team's snaps. Looking back to last year's meeting with the Packers in the regular season, Jones played 53 snaps, which was 84% of Atlanta's plays. He played 48% in week one, just for comparison. He had 5 targets, 3 catches, 29 yards, 4.4 FanDuel points. That's a complete dud. The worrisome part to me about week one is that Jones had no deep targets, as in targets at least 16 yards downfield. Of course, Matt Ryan attempted just 2 and both went to Austin Hooper. So that's a big part of it. But the 2 red zone targets, or rather 2 red zone targets, went to Taylor Gabriel rather than Jones. Now, in 2016, against Green Bay in the regular season, Sanu led the team in targets with 10. Jones had 5. Jones was 0 for 2 on deep targets. Atlanta had only 3 on the day, but Jones had 0 red zone targets of Atlanta's 5, similar to what we saw in week one. But in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, Jones caught 3 of 4 deep targets for 60 yards. Matt Ryan threw 8 times deep downfield. Julio Jones also had 3 red zone targets in that game as well. I'm seeing mixed signals here. Are we going to be able to rely on Julio Jones in this firework of a matchup, or are there legitimate reasons to be worried?
I think there's reason for a little bit of worry, but in the press conference after that Bears game, offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian said they need to get Julio the ball more. They have talked most of the offseason about getting him more involved in the red zone. That didn't happen. So based on the talk, and of course we always need to be skeptical of coach speak, I would assume that Julio would get a lot of targets. And we no longer have that narrative of Kyle Shanahan just feeding his top wide receiver, which is kind of bogus to begin with. But I think that he's Julio Jones, and we know the insane upside he has. And although Green Bay is a lot healthier now than they were in that NFC Championship game, they're still not a great secondary. So I tend to want to go heavy on Julio Jones this week. I don't know if that's just me overlooking concerns, but for me, I think I just want to go hard no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I love him still. I think he's in a great spot, but like that's not the issue. It's just the usage, and we know that the Falcons can spread the ball around. He's not cheap. I need that production. I'm just thinking about if I'm paying up. Last week, it was mostly for Jones rather than Antonio Brown. Thankfully, I had some Antonio Brown, but this week it might be Brown over Jones. I'm not totally certain.
That'll be the good game theory play, because Brown is facing a tough Vikings team, but he's at home, which is where the Steelers thrive. So I think that's the good game theory way, but I also am dumb. I don't have the cosmic brain, so give me Julio, man. Let's go. My second trend, sticking in that exact same game, we had talked last week about how good Ty Montgomery can be when he gets snaps. And he got all of them last week. Of the Packers' 82 snaps, Montgomery played 74. No other running back played more than 64 snaps, and only 3 guys were within 20 snaps of Montgomery. Hot dang. He got 19 carries and 4 targets for the game, and you can look at his production and scoff if you want. But if he gets 23 opportunities against the Falcons, dude could go bonkers. The Falcons finished last year ranked 31st against the rush, according to NumberFire's metrics. Both Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen had success on the ground against them last week, and that was without their top offensive lineman, Kyle Long. So it's probably not going to change for the Falcons being suddenly a great rush defense. And they also, this is a key for Montgomery, they just funneled targets to running backs. They allowed 109 receptions out of the backfield last year, the highest mark in the league by a full 7 receptions. Cohen had 12 targets last week. Howard had 5, so 17 total backfield targets. Montgomery is $6,500, which is way too cheap at this snap rate. But he's also getting tons of love from the fantasy community. So, Brandon, high ownership running backs on the road frighten me to death. Are you willing to roster Montgomery at what is likely going to be extremely high ownership?
In cash games, yes. I don't worry about ownership. He fits the construction of paying down at running back, which is 100% opposite of what I felt last week. As for tournaments, this feels like a situation where you have to be willing to go significantly overweight or underweight on Ty Montgomery. And by that, I mean, if you think Montgomery is going to be 30% owned in tournaments, you either benefit from having him on, you know, like half, like 50 or 60% of your lineups, or basically none. I don't think that you should be playing this in line with the ownership in terms of your own exposure. I'll probably go overweight. That snap rate is no joke. That's what I want to pay up for with Le'Veon Bell. That 90% snap rate, which Bell did not give us in week one. If Montgomery's the guy, he's really good. Yeah. And I will just play him. So I'm not worried about it too much, and I will be overweight on him.
80% exposure, baby. Let's go. All in on Timon. Whatever. I don't care. Process goes out the window when I fall in love with a guy, and I am in love with Ty Montgomery. So let's go.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you pay – all right, I don't want this to – it's all right, it's the heat check, so I don't care if it's hyperbole.
Yeah, let's go.
Would you pay $6,500 for Le'Veon Bell in this matchup?
Yes. And Ty Montgomery is basically Le'Veon Bell based on that snap rate in week one. So, yeah, let's go Ty Montgomery. Let's move into your third trend, Brandon. A guy who, you know, may have disappointed a bit last week. Terrell Pryor was facing the Eagles, did okay. But a lot of opportunity there. And your third trend is looking at Pryor's deep target rate, which to me is interesting.
Terrell Pryor is a good example of why digging deeper than just the box score can help contextualize a particular game. I mean, he had a bit of a nice showing in week one, even if the stat line doesn't show at all. He was targeted 11 times. He caught six of them for 66 yards. He played 84% of the team's snaps, which was a receiver high for the team. But that's nothing in itself to get us super jazzed. The 11 targets tied for sixth among receivers in week one, but the 9.6 FanDuel points tied for just 29th. What really has my attention is that Pryor had three long targets, passes that traveled at least 16 yards downfield. He had two red zone targets, and he had two end zone targets as well. You can't ask for much more when that's paired with 11 targets in total. The matchup against the Rams doesn't inspire quite as much confidence. I'm not taking too much info away from their week one showing, but they do get Aaron Donald back this week. Washington allowed Kirk Cousins to be pressured on 19 of 47 dropbacks by the Eagles, according to Pro Football Focus. We know the Eagles have a good front seven. But Rich Rebar of RotoWorld pointed out that the Rams allowed some big games to big receivers in 2016. Michael Thomas had 27.3 FanDuel points against them. Mike Evans had 24.2. Devontae Parker put up 17.9. The targets should be there for Pryor. If week one was any indication, Jamison Crowder should, in theory, be healthier, but he already saw seven targets in week one as it is, so I can't expect that to go up significantly higher. Jordan Reed gets a tough matchup against a defense that allowed a double-digit FanDuel points in just four games last year, just three if you exclude week 17. I want to go there. I'm not sure if I can justify Terrell Pryor for 6,800. He doesn't really fit my roster construction. Should I just be spending up at receiver anyway, or is Pryor, does he make sense?
Yeah, I wasn't really on Pryor until the same thing you mentioned, Rich Rebar of RotoWorld in his notebook, which is an amazing read every week. I wasn't on him until then, and I think that the matchup here is the thing that scares me most. I loved his usage last week, and I agree with you. I'm not worried about Terrell Pryor, the fantasy asset. I'm more worried about this matchup against the Rams, and getting Aaron Donald back against an offensive line that has had some issues both in the preseason and in the regular season now. Part of that was Chris Spencer being out. He is now back. So I'm conflicted, I guess. I need more time to think here, but right now I'm probably not going to have a ton of Terrell Pryor, I guess.
There are just so many plays this week.
There are a lot that I love. Like, there were some that I liked last week, but there are a lot that I love this week.
Yeah, I mean, running back has a ton, wide receiver has a ton. I don't know who's going to be popular.
Yeah.
I think there are too many guys that anyone's significantly too overowned. So maybe that makes Pryor just a fade, because if everyone's a little bit depressed in terms of ownership, I don't need to get too cute.
And if there are a lot of guys we love, no one's going to use a guy with a questionable tag next to his name, which applies to John Brown right now. My third trend, looking at old Smokey, he didn't practice on Wednesday, so this could all be moot, but he certainly looked healthy in week one. He played 84% of the snaps for the Cardinals, besting Jerron Brown by 8 snaps and J.J. Nelson by 33. And this was 63 total snaps for Brown, so it really did seem like he was healthy. That is, of course, until he missed practice on Wednesday with a quad injury, possibly just rest. We're recording this Thursday morning, so hard to tell with Smokey there. But he did get plenty of usage in that game while he was on the field. Brown tied David Johnson for second on the team in targets with 9. Two of those targets for Brown were at least 16 yards downfield. One of them was in the red zone, and the production was not there. But usage matters more, as Brandon discussed with Terrell Pryor. Now, they're facing the Colts, and we just saw Jared Goff shred them last week. Vontae Davis not back at practice yet, meaning those struggles should continue. Brown is 5,800 on FanDuel this week, and if he plays, he could be a monster. But now, we have this missed practice Wednesday, tossed into the fold. It's possible he will practice the rest of the week, and this will be just totally moot. But Brandon, does that scare you out of using John Brown for this price?
I love John Brown.
Me too.
He was out with a quad injury, something he was dealing with in the preseason. So unless it got worse, the sitting out could just be precautionary. Lord knows the Cardinals need to be safe with any assets they have now. Brown also had an end zone target in there as well in week one. I like that. And it does say a lot that their implied team total of 25.75 is sixth highest of all teams this weekend, even without David Johnson. I'm willing to trust Brown, though that means I'm missing out on some of the higher-priced receivers if I go that route. I think the big issues for me are the 7.5-point spread, which if they get out ahead, maybe they just try to grind it out and get off the field and stay healthy. And then the other concern, of course, is his price from a roster construction standpoint.
Yeah, the spread doesn't bother me much because I'm not sure they'll be able to run the ball. The Colts were very good against Todd Gurley last week, which could be a statement more about Gurley than the Rams or than the Colts. I'm not really sure how that one breaks apart.
I guess the talent level between Gurley and like Kerwin Williams is probably about the same.
Yeah. or Chris Johnson, you know.
Yeah.
They're all the same. So I guess I am not worried about the spread personally. I'm not worried about Carson Palmer that much. I think I'm just going to have a lot of Brown this week. And there are guys in that range, Adam Thielen, Chris Hogan, who are all fine to me in that exact same price range. So I'll probably pay down at one wide receiver slot in most lineups. And Brown to me is a very good target for doing that. So my roster construction may be a bit different than yours based on the way we're sounding here. But Smokey to me is a really fun play. One asset, Brandon, that could help us, or one backfield, I should say, that could help us afford those high-priced wide receivers is the Baltimore Ravens backfield. Because no Danny Woodhead, they are pretty big favorites at home this week against the Browns, which could lead to a lot of rushes and they had a lot of them last week to begin with. So your fourth trend, looking at that Baltimore Ravens backfield and some potentially interesting snap rates.
Yeah, I mean, there are some intriguing backfields on heavy favorites this week. Not just here in Baltimore. I mean, Oakland and Marshawn Lynch, 14-point favorites, same as the Seahawks and their tandem of 38 running backs.
Half the roster, yeah.
But we also have the Baltimore Ravens as 8-point home favorites against the Cleveland Browns, who did hold Le'Veon Bell in check. Their front seven is not terrible by any means, but we know that Baltimore wants to run the football based on what they did last week. Last week, 9 running backs had at least 19 carries. 2 of them play for Baltimore, which is absurd to me. Terrence West had 19 carries on 41% of Baltimore snaps in an extremely positive game script. He had 2 carries from inside the 10 as well, and he had a touchdown. West is 6,600 on FanDuel this week. Javorius Buck Allen played 50% of the team's snaps, so he out-snapped Terrence West. He had 21 carries, so two more than West, for 71 yards. So that's just 7.1 FanDuel points because he didn't score a touchdown. No receiving production either. But he had a red zone carry and a red zone target. And the target actually came from inside the 10, which we have to like. There were some scoring chances. He just didn't convert. Now, Baltimore's implied team total is low at just 23.5 points. But Allen is just 4,900. He makes for a great stack with the Baltimore defense if you play that angle where Baltimore gets out ahead, has some good defensive production. 21 carries last week. Should we have interest in either of these backs, or are there just too many other better backfield situations to target this week?
How bad is Terrence West if Danny Woodhead gets hurt and he plays 41% of the snaps in grotesquely positive game script and still gets out-carried by Buck Allen? How bad is he?
The only thing I can think is they knew Woodhead was out. They knew that they were winning. They just tried to save him. So that worries me with Allen. But again, 4,900, and he should take over that Woodhead role as a receiver to give him a little bit of a floor. And 4,900 is a lot cheaper than even someone who's like 5,900. It's obvious, but like that's a cheap price for a running back with the. With a snap share that was 50% in week one.
Right. That's the difference between essentially Terrell Pryor and Michael Thomas in pricing.
Yeah.
So I will have Buck Allen lineups, but I'm probably not going to have a ton. They lost a ton of dudes on their offensive line in the preseason. So I don't like that team as a whole, but he's too cheap. The script is too good. I think that Cleveland could be sneaky kind of okay because of all their draft picks and the money they had to spend. But with the way things set up right now, I will have tons of the Baltimore defense, and I'll have at least a little bit of Buck Allen. One guy I'm also considering in this kind of lower range of pricing at running back is Christian McCaffrey. And entering the year, I was never super drawn toward McCaffrey. His price in redraft was too high, and I just wanted really no piece of him. But in week one, though, that changed quite a bit. The Panthers led the entire game against the 49ers, which is a game script that sets up well for Jonathan Stewart. The snaps didn't break that way. McCaffrey didn't just out-snap Stewart, and he did do that too. But he out-snapped every skill position guy on the team not named Greg Olsen. McCaffrey finished the game with 47 snaps, equating to 70%. Stewart was at 29 snaps, or 43%. In those snaps, McCaffrey got 13 rushes and 7 targets, with those targets being the highest number on the team. And this game sets up similarly to week one, what they did against San Francisco. The Panthers are 7-point favorites over the Bills. Implied team total is 25. The Bills finished 2016, ranked 20th against both the pass and the rush. So the Panthers should be able to move the ball. This has me inching closer to McCaffrey at 6,600. Brandon, the allure for playing time is huge, but does Stewart's presence prevent you from going here in DFS?
Yeah, on FanDuel at least. We need those touchdowns. At least I do. I think it makes a lot of sense. Around 12% of running back games in 2016 with at least 15 FanDuel points. Only 12% came without a touchdown. McCaffrey had just one red zone carry despite playing so much, despite Carolina scoring a lot of points. Stewart had two red zone carries by comparison, both of which were inside the 10, and he had a target from inside the 10, which does not bode well for my feeling.
He scored, too.
Yeah. It does not bode well for my feeling for McCaffrey on a site like FanDuel for the rest of the season. Of course, that could change. It could just be, you know, a one-week fluke. But, I mean, McCaffrey's still on my tournament list at 6,600 because he's so athletic and can do so much, but I'd rather play Stewart at 5,900 with the touchdown upside, which also bumps up his floor if we think that Carolina is going to score this week.
So two rookie backs are the exact same price, and both had interesting snap rates in week one. Would you rather play Dalvin Cook or Christian McCaffrey?
I haven't given any thought to Cook as an underdog on the road. That I don't know if I want to go with an underdog rookie running back.
I think I'm just like, I don't know. I think this situation sets up so well for McCaffrey that because I was on Cook initially because he's just underpriced, I think. But then seeing McCaffrey there as a home favorite based on his snap rate last week, I think I'm going to go there at least a little bit in tournaments, see what happens. So I'm in on McCaffrey, and I think I'm not going to have a ton of exposure, but like it's not going to be Ty Montgomery level, but it'll be a decent amount, I think. I don't know.
So we'll you think Dalvin Cook at 6,700, 6-point underdog with an implied team total of 20. You think he's underpriced there?
Yeah, based on his snap rate last week, totally. He had 6 targets too. So
it's true.
I think that based on those things, it's not a Ty Montgomery situation because he didn't play as many snaps as Ty Montgomery, but it's like Ty Montgomery light, I guess, if that makes any sense at all. It may not. I don't know.
So
that's kind of the way I view it, though.
A guy like Cook at 67 with a game script expected to be what we would normally write off for running back, or someone like Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, Marshawn.
Okay.
But he's 500 more, too.
Yeah, but like the snap rate was not
right.
The same. That kind
absolutely.
Of absolutely okay.
Yeah, yeah. Marshawn's never going to play a ton of snaps. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I would just pay it for Marshawn there, or maybe just find the money for Melvin freaking Gordon, who is 7,600, which is amazing.
Love that.
So, I think that I'm going to have McCaffrey most of that group outside of Marshawn, excluding Gordon. I think that if again, no time on either. I think the McCaffrey will be in there for me a decent amount. I don't know. I liked what I saw week one from his snap rate. So let's take a look at what Vegas has to say for this week. And of course, we have to talk about the Patriots and the Saints. The over-under is skyrocketing. It is now 55.5. It opened at 54 in some places, but it's pretty much 55.5 everywhere. New England is a 6.5-point road favorite, and in places where the total was 54 to open, they were 4.5-point favorites. And they will have 10 days to prep for this game. They're facing the Saints, who played Monday night. So, Brandon, we can't play all these guys, unfortunately. Who are your top plays in this game from both sides?
Brady in cash games.
Okay.
Chris Hogan in tournaments at 6.2.
Okay.
Okay, on FanDuel. Maybe some sprinkles of James White at 5.7. But I got to have some Mike Gillisley. If I'm talking Saints, I think I'm mostly focused on Drew Brees and Kobe Fleener.
Okay. No Michael Thomas because of the Bill Belichick top option narrative?
I guess. Definitely not the running backs unless it's
no.
Maybe Kamara, but I don't think I need to go there.
Yeah,
there's
I don't
so
feel the
good
need
running
to.
Backs. What about you?
I adore Brees in tournaments. I like Fleener. I'll have Thomas too. Plenty of Saints for me. Maybe I'll have some Ted Ginn shares. You know, why not? On the Patriots, I might go Ryan over Brady in cash, to be honest. I don't even know if I'll be using Tom Brady there. I don't know if that's dumb, but I'm probably going to do it.
Sam Bradford had like 7 days to throw with Minnesota's line. Tom Brady had a lot of time to throw. He threw 15 deep passes in week one. I know part of it was because they were trailing, but I think he's just going to be able to sit back in the pocket and just pick them apart.
Brady went full DGAF, which was fun. I really enjoyed that. So I don't know. I think I'll have more Saints than Patriots due to what I expect to be higher ownership on the Pats. So I don't know. I think that's the way we do. What about Brandon Cook's revenge game narrative? How are you feeling on that?
I mean, I'm going to have lineups with pretty much all of these guys. Like I will have Brandon Cooks. I will have some Michael Thomas, but I'm not sold on them quite as much as I'd rather pay down for Chris Hogan for the majority of my lineups.
Yeah, I want to get a read on Cooks because if he's not getting a lot of love, then I'll go hard there. But I think that's going to be the case more so for Hogan.
He's going to get love. It's the revenge game. He's back in the Superdome, the Coors Field, as Rich Rufo says.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Uh-huh, we'll be popular.
Man. Yeah, man. Oh, well, I guess I'll go Hogan. Moving on to the Packers and Falcons over under their 53.5. The other potential shootout on the slate with the over under being there. The over under opened at 54, went up to 54.5 briefly, and then quickly came back down to 53.5. So, Brandon, do you like this game more than Patriots Saints, or where do you feel in this game relative to the other one?
I still think I like the Patriots Saints game more. The Saints defense, clearly nothing to worry about. The Patriots defense might not be that great right now either.
Yeah.
I do have some concerns with – I don't know. I like this game aplenty. Yeah. Like, it's going to be like the 1B. Like, I don't think anybody's questioning that. I just don't know how to attack it as easily as I do the Patriots and Saints.
I'm actually the opposite. Like, I think it's because I'm more comfortable with Julio than you are. I think that's why I'm more because like I'm going to have way too many lineups that are a Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Ty Montgomery stack. Like that's going to be in a ton of my lineups. Maybe I should have some Randall Cobb stacks in there too. But I think I honestly might go harder on the Packers Falcons. That Sunday Night Hammer, man. I know that's not the reason that I'm doing it, but hey, it's a nice little perk, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I do have Ryan Montgomery Jones written down in my notebook as a, okay. as a game stack. I want to make sure that I have exposure to also Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about Devontae Freeman at home.
Yeah.
I wrote him up in the FanDuel primer on NumberFire. He does a lot better at home. I don't have the splits pulled up, but I'm worried about the snap rate. I want to avoid. I don't want to chase Austin Hooper. I want to avoid the running backs, but I shouldn't. So that I think that's where I'm coming from.
What about your boy Tevin Coleman?
I don't ever want to target the backup running back or the 1B.
Yeah.
Unless it's like Buck Allen at 4,900.
He's the one. There's no A. It's not 1A and 1B. It's Buck Allen number one, baby. Let's move out to Oakland, where the Raiders are favored by 14 over the Jets. 28.75 point implied team total, and they're at home. It sounds like we should consider their running backs. Marshawn Lynch played the first two series and got cycled out in week one. Ended up playing 49% of Oakland snaps, 18 carries, three of which were in the red zone, two of which were inside the 10. $7,200, interesting price. Brandon, do you have interest in Lynch, and does the spread get you off of a great passing offense?
Lots of interest in Lynch. Not going to get cute with Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington.
Nope.
We're not talking about the Oakland passing game much. That could be a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Amari Cooper had four targets from inside the 10. I don't know how to play this one. This could be, of all the offenses to go under on, this could be the one.
Yeah, I'm going to have Marshawn. I'm going to have a lot of Jared Cook. 71% snap rate in week one. He's my boy. So a lot of Jared Cook. I don't think I'll have Derek Carr. I don't mind using quarterbacks who are super heavy favorites, but like I don't think I'll be going there. But I do want some Amari Cooper. What are you doing most here?
It's going to be Lynch, some Cook, because he meets that tight end checklist of being a huge home favorite with a big implied team total. I don't really have much Crabtree Cooper exposure just yet, and that's what worries me.
Yeah, I think I'm way more into Cooper than Crabtree. Crabtree's snap rate was kind of low last week. It was one higher than Cook, so maybe I shouldn't complain. But regardless, I probably won't have Crabtree.
Yeah, Seth Roberts did out-snap him.
Which is weird.
83% to 73%.
That's insane. Like, I don't get that.
Although Crabtree did, despite all of the Amari Cooper hype, Crabtree had more catches. He was six catches on seven targets. Cooper was 5 for 13. He had 83 yards to Cooper, 62. Those are nice.
Yeah.
But the snap rate is concerning.
Yeah, with Cooper getting 13 targets and that many in the red zone, I will have him. And I think it'll be Cook, Cooper, and Lynch for me this week for Oakland. Let's close up shop here in Vegas with the Seahawks. They are favored by 14 over the 49ers, and we always want to target teams with huge implied team totals. The Seahawks are fourth on the slate there at 28, favored by 14 again over the 49ers. It opened at the Seahawks minus 12, quickly moved to minus 14. 80% of public bets are on the Seahawks, so that makes sense. However, Brandon, the running back situation here is awful. Chris Carson led the team in snaps last week. Thomas Rawls is expected to return, though. So with that in mind, how are you getting exposure to the Seahawks this week?
Well, Pete Carroll said that he said anxious to see more Chris Carson.
Yeah.
But he also said that Eddie Lacy looked great.
Carry the load, baby.
In the preseason.
My goodness.
So I can't even remotely justify playing any of the Seattle running backs. I will be playing the passing game with Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, even Jimmy Graham, Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson. I like this passing attack.
Yeah, you mentioned before potentially seeing Oakland go over or under-owned. I think that's the Seattle offense this week. And I don't know how I want to do it. I love Baldwin at home always, and I prefer playing him at home. But, like, I don't know, man. I I'm really shook by this team right now. So I want some Paul Richardson, I think, and I want some Doug Baldwin. But outside of that, I don't know. I feel cautious about going there because the 49ers have spent a ton in draft capital up front the past couple of years. George Fant, not a left tackle. We saw the effects of that last week against the Packers. So I don't think I'll have any rust, but I think I want to get the receivers. Maybe I'm just too light on this game. I don't know.
Well, I can't forget. Like, I can't get the image of
running backwards.
Russell Wilson, like, running backwards and, yeah, and three Packers chasing him, and then all five linemen.
It was so bad.
Like, looking back. Like, that's still in my mind. Yeah. I'm worried about that, but Seattle plays way better at home. Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, that's where they really click. Paul Richardson had a lot of deep targets in week one. Jimmy Graham had an end zone target. Some of his targets were like behind the line of scrimmage. It was just a mess of a game.
Yeah.
I like this as a bounce back here.
Yeah, that was a weird game overall. It was just very strange. So I think for me, it's Baldwin, Richardson, and not a ton of either of them. But I don't know, man. That's probably the way I'll play it for this week. Weather for this week, not a whole lot going on. There is a slight chance of rain on Sunday with the Chiefs hosting the Eagles. Right now, those odds are low, but it's worth checking back on later. Wind is currently projected to be at 10 miles per hour for the Jets and the Raiders out in Oakland. If it gets any higher, then you may want to reconsider the passing offenses, but it should be okay for right now. That's honestly it. So make sure you go to NumberFire's Games and Lineups page. It's under the DFS tab. You can find it there. It'll have the weather with precipitation, with any wind speeds that may be there. I get really nervous around 15 miles per hour, a little bit nervous around 10 miles per hour for the winds. So make sure you check that out and keep yourself up to date as Sunday rolls along. Positional plays. Let's dive into the quarterbacks, Brandon. Ya boy in cash, Tom Brady. And let's talk through Tom Brady here and what you see with him at 9,200.
I almost just didn't discuss Brady because he's really obvious.
Like implied, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the more and more I think on it, you know, these top four quarterbacks, Brady, Breeze, Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, they're not the only good quarterback plays this week. We got Ben Roethlisberger at home against tough defense. Jared Goff, if you want to pay down. Russell Wilson. Cam Newton started clicking in the fourth quarter or later in the game as well. In week one. So these four guys aren't all going to be like 25% owned. Not one of these guys is going to be like the absolute chalk. Brady's probably going to be the most popular, but with so many quarterbacks that should just keep exposure down. And, you know, I'm even looking there in tournaments because I can differentiate elsewhere. As I mentioned, New Orleans couldn't get pressure on Sam Bradford in week one. The offensive line of Minnesota, not great. So Brady should have time to throw. He threw it deep 15 times in week one, which was easily a league high. So I'm all in on Brady. I'll stack him with Hogan in some lineups to differentiate in some places. I do also love Russell Wilson. There are just so many quarterbacks this week who are in amazing matchups. So Brady in cash games, I can find value elsewhere. But in tournaments, I really think we have to look to Russell Wilson because he's going to get overlooked. Based on how Seattle played in week one, the 49ers ranked 26th in pass defense by NumberFire's metrics in 2016. Wilson was pressured on nearly 40% of his dropbacks, according to Pro Football Focus in week one. That has to worry us. I know that we're worried, but I like him as a tournament play at home as a huge favorite with a big implied team total.
Yeah, I think the good thing for Russ is that the 49ers didn't do much against Cam last week, so maybe that's okay. Maybe it'll be a future thing for the 49ers. I want to talk to you about Brady, though. Who is your favorite play in tournaments? I know you love Brady in cash, but who is your top guy in tournaments this week? Can be anyone.
On quarterbacks, Drew Brees.
Drew Brees. All right, so let's talk about Drew Brees. I always want Drew Brees at home, and I want him even more if people are going to be infatuated with his opponent on the other sideline, which makes sense. He's Tom Brady, after all. But as mentioned before, Brees just shreds even the best defenses when he's at home. The Patriots may not even be that based on what happened last week. So I love Brees here. Again, 23.4 FanDuel points per game at home last year against top 16 defenses. Patriots may not be that. My one concern, Zach Strafe is out, and the Patriots have 10 days of rest. The Saints just played Monday night. That is enough to keep me from going all in on Brees. But I think he's still one of my favorites. And I think that Brees is my number two guy in tournaments behind Matt Ryan, who will probably be my guy in cash as well. And if I get too skittish with Brees, I'll just save the 500 and go with Ryan. He has been tremendous against the Packers in the past. 288 yards, 3 touchdowns against them last year in the regular season, 392 with 4 touchdowns in the postseason, and Ryan was basically Breeze at home last year, averaging 23.2 FanDuel points per game. Getting that for 8,200 feels like a steal. The Packers did shut down Russell Wilson last week, but the Seahawks were down their left tackle. The Falcons, pretty healthy. The Packers can get after the passer, but the Falcons are better equipped to counter that. So I adore Matt Ryan for this week, Brandon. I know you mentioned that Breeze is your favorite guy in tournaments. You like Tom Brady. Where does Ryan stack up there?
He's going to be in the mix for me for sure, especially when I play Julio. Those stacks didn't work out last week, but I'm going back there. Mm-hmm. I would probably put him fourth because he is the lowest priced of the four. And I think that alone will bump up his ownership because people think they're getting a discount, and they are. But that makes me want to spend up just to be a little bit more contrarian in tournaments.
Spend up to be contrarian is a big thing when there are attractive lower priced options, and you have that with Matt Ryan. I'll mention too that I don't mind Carson Palmer and Jared Goff. I may have exposure. Let's see. Let's move into the running backs now, though, Brandon. Who are you digging this week at back?
Speaking of spending up to be contrarian, Le'Veon Bell at 9,100.
Let's go, baby.
We can't just forget about this guy. I mean, without David Johnson in the mix, Bell takes over as the back with the biggest workload in theory, unless Ty Montgomery gets 90% of Green Bay snaps again. Bell played just 72% of the snaps in week one. His low watermark in 2016 was 87%. His 10 carries and 6 targets, which combines for 16 opportunities, that was fewer than in any game he had last year in the 12 games he played. And he had 23 or more opportunities in 11 of his 12 games. The matchup against the Vikings is not easy. They ranked 3rd overall by number fires metrics. Defensively, they were 5th against the rush in 2016. But I have to think the workload grows at home. Bell, who had at least 10 FanDuel points in all 12 games last season, doesn't really fit the typical roster construction this week. And it's scary not to have exposure to him in tournaments. I think he makes for a great tournament play. I love Marshawn Lynch at 7,200. It's FanDuel. We want touchdowns. Lynch's script could not set up better for touchdowns this week. Oakland's a 14-point favorite, so they should run. Their implied team total is north of 28, so they should score. Lynch had 2 carries from inside the 10 last week. Again, Amari Cooper had 4 targets from that range, so maybe they get a little bit more run heavy. And there may not be a better bet for a touchdown than Marshawn Lynch in his debut game in Oakland.
I forgot about that, the narrative. Yeah. Yes. Oh, man, 100% exposure. Let's go.
I can just see him now doing some goofy thing.
I hope he gives a double barrel of freedom rockets like he did last week. Just 2 middle fingers right in front of the face bath. That is my favorite picture of all time. That should be his touchdown celebration.
Yeah, I can't really envision a scenario where Lynch is not in the end zone doing
something.
If you
don't like Marshawn Lynch as a player, what are you doing with your life? He's so fun.
Well, someone who's not quite as fun is Javorius Allen.
I wouldn't go that far. He's pretty fun, too.
4,900. I mean, Baltimore's an 8-point home favorite over the Browns. Again, the implied team total, 23.5. It's not stellar for a running back. The price is, and Allen outsnapped Terrence West in week one. West again, 6,600. Allen played 50% of Baltimore's snaps in the opener. He also saw 21 carries. West did take both carries from inside the 10, which I don't like, but Allen did have a red zone target and carry of his own. And if you're betting on a Ravens blowout, Allen has to pique your interest at this price.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will have Buck Allen for sure. So Buck to me is the lowest I'll go, and he'll probably be the only guy I use. Maybe some James White below 6,000, but I think that'll mostly be Buck. My first love, our boy, our heartthrob of the week, very chalky, Ty Montgomery. We talked before about the snaps, which is huge for a guy who's 6,500, but he's also just a great fantasy asset when he's able to play a bunch. He averages 15.2 FanDuel points per game in games in which he plays at least half the snaps, which he was way above last week. Great matchup for Ty Mont. The Falcons defense should give him a huge receiving floor. If Brian Bulaga plays, that's just a bonus. I will use time out no matter what, but I will be all in on him this week, especially with how many targets he should get in that game and the efficiency you would assume as well. He is my favorite way to get exposure to the Packers. I was also just shocked to see how cheap Melvin Gordon was. He is $7,600. What? He should be way beyond that. Despite some bad negative game script last week, Gordon played 76% of the snaps, 18 carries, 6 targets for him against Denver. The last time that Gordon had fewer than 21 opportunities in a healthy game was week 5 of last year when he had 17. That was his only game below 21 after week 2 of last year, when Danny Woodhead got hurt in week 1, I should say. The Dolphins were 16th against the pass and 29th against the rush last year, so I love Melvin Gordon here with the Chargers favored by 4.5. Finally, Christian McCaffrey. Again, I think the Panthers seem determined to get McCaffrey involved in week 1, and there's no reason to think that'll change in week 2. They're pretty heavily favored, which means he should get rushing volume. He had 7 targets last week in a positive game script, further bolstering his floor. So I just don't think a guy with his snap rate should be 6,600, so I'll pair him with Taimont in plenty of lineups this week. I'm not using him over Taimont, but I think the McCaffrey for me, if I'm not using Marshawn, if I'm not using Buck Allen, a guy like that, I think that McCaffrey will certainly be on quite a few of my rosters. Brandon, let's move into wide receiver. You haven't touched too much on Doug Baldwin here, but I think there are a lot of reasons to like him. So why does he make your love list for this week?
Well, before I even get to Baldwin, I do like Antonio Brown at 9,400. He's really expensive. Xavier Rhodes did not shadow Michael Thomas in week 1. Maybe he doesn't shadow Antonio Brown. I like Julio Jones as well. But Doug Baldwin, 7,600, that's really cheap. He disappointed in week 1. That's what happens when your quarterback struggles as much as Russell Wilson did. He caught all 4 targets for 63 yards. He played 88% of Seattle snaps. Russell Wilson threw deep 8 times in week 1, but completed only 2 of them. San Francisco was 31st against explosive pass plays in 2016, according to Sharp Football Stats. Baldwin, Paul Richardson at 5,200, he had 3 deep targets in week 1. Tyler Lockett, 5,700, 2 red zone targets in week 1. They're all in play for me, honestly. And since the start of 2016, Baldwin has averaged 15.9 FanDuel points in 8 games at home compared to 9.2 on the road in 9 games. I think he makes for a great low-owned play. I also love Tyreek Hill at 7,200. I don't like Tyreek Hill much, but I went back and forth on Hill and Diggs. Stephon Diggs, who's in a great spot against Joe Hayden in coverage against the Steelers. Diggs is 6,500. I just know that he's going to be popular. And Minnesota has an implied team total of just 20 points. They should be playing catch-up, but Tyreek Hill's Chiefs have an implied total of 26.5 points against the Eagles secondary. Just lost Ronald Darby, who dislocated his ankle in week 1. Tyreek Hill had 8 targets in week 1, which he turned into 133 yards and a touchdown. He did play just 73% of snaps, so that's a thing, but if you want tournament upside, Tyreek Hill makes sense. And I'm just going to say it so that it's on record in audio form. Chris Conley, 94% of snaps, top 7 rate among wide receivers, 2 deep targets. We saw him have a huge long touchdown in the preseason that got called back. 4,900, I will have sprinkles of Chris Conley this week, and I don't think it's just a homer play.
How many points? Over under 75?
Under, but only just.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
I also love Cooper Kupp at 5,400. Again, he doesn't really fit that construction of paying up for a wide receiver, paying down for running back, but I think Kupp with like a Le'Veon Bell makes sense. Cooper Kupp caught 3 deep passes in week 1 for 70 yards and a touchdown. In all, he played 60% of the team's snaps and had a team high 6 targets. According to ESPN's Mike Clay, Josh Norman did not shadow Alshon Jeffrey in week 1. So Norman may not shadow Sammy Watkins. If he does, that's a boost for Kupp. If not, Kupp still gets to match up with some weak corners from Washington for most of the game. He makes for a nice stack with Jared Goff, who I will have some exposure to. And that alone lets you differentiate your lineup significantly, like I said, fitting in Le'Veon Bell, something like that.
You mentioned that Norman didn't shadow. Will you have any Sammy Watkins shares as a result?
No, the Watkins usage was weird. To me, I would much rather just have Kupp. Uh-huh. And also that plays into a Terrell Pryor game stack if I want to go there, which I will have some of those. But would you play Sammy Watkins this week?
Interested, maybe not. I don't know. I agree the usage was weird.
Yeah, I know you're much higher on Watkins than I am. And if you're not, then I'm not.
I'm hesitant, yeah. So that's probably a good indicator to probably not use Sammy. But I'll have some. I think I will have maybe some. There we go. Super committal, Jim. So let's talk about someone who I am committed to. That's Julio freaking Jones, man. He exploded against the Packers in the playoffs last year. A buck 80, 2 scores. They're way healthier now than they were then, but very few wide receivers can touch Julio Jones' upside. Now I have the ability to pay up a wide receiver, and when that's the case, I want heavy exposure to Julio. With wide receivers, I just want guys in huge over-unders. That's what the Falcons have this week. To me, he is the no-brainer way to get exposure to their offense, so give me all the Julio. I also think my thoughts on Keenan Allen are similar to what I said with Melvin Gordon. He's just too cheap. Allen is 7,100, making him the 17th most expensive receiver on the main slate, and for that, you're getting a guy who had 10 targets and a touchdown last week against the Denver Broncos, the toughest matchup in the league for a wide receiver. Allen had 30% of their overall targets against a team that kills wide receivers. One of those targets was deep, and another was in the red zone. This guy needs to be more expensive, so I will happily use him against the Dolphins. The Dolphins already lost a corner in the preseason, Tony Lippett, out for the year. They did have a bye week, and the Chargers are on short rest. So that's the thing, and it makes me want to at least not go all in on Allen and Gordon, but I will have plenty of both for this week. And finally, my third love is Chris Hogan. The results were not there last week, but plenty of the signals were. As Sam Bradford showed, you can kill the Saints with deep ball, with deep passes. Hogan led the Patriots in deep ball targets last week with 4, continuing what he did all of last year. I think he was the number one receiver on deep balls based on number fires metrics. Hogan's average depth of target was more than 20 yards downfield, and while that makes him risky, it also gives him disgusting upside. So those using the Patriots this week will likely focus on Gronk or the Brandon Cooks revenge game, and I love Cooks this week. But if that lets Hogan fly under the radar for 6,200, I am all about it. So Chris Hogan to me is very interesting. I should mention too, Adam Thielen, I believe 5,800, John Brown in that same range. They're enough for me to use one slot at wide receiver paying down for this week. Brandon, let's move on to the tight ends where you got Jimmy Graham as your the first guy you are discussing. Graham at home, huge implied team total. Why not?
Yeah, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to have some darts on Marquise Lee at 5,900. Okay. I just want to let people know he had 4 deep targets. Could have been interfered with on pretty much all 3 of them. He did get interfered with on 1 of them. So just keep an eye on him for tournaments.
He was sneaky not bad last year.
Yeah, yeah. There are just so many receivers that I couldn't mention that I wanted to.
Right.
I'll be playing Gronk a lot, but I probably don't need to discuss him much. I like Jimmy Graham as well. I think week 2 is a good week to kind of feast on the overreactions, and Graham turned 7 targets into just 8 yards, but he did play 82% of the team's snaps. He also had a deep target and an end zone target as well, which he may or may not have been interfered on. It's a little too high anyway, but I think he's a bounce back candidate as a home favorite with a huge implied team total. If I'm spending down so I can jam in all these studs in other places, Zach Miller at 4,500. Miller's the inverse of what we want at tight end, or at least what I look for. He's a road underdog with a low total. The Bears have an implied team total of just 18.5. But Chicago just sent Kevin White to injured reserve. Miller at minimum salary played 60% of the snaps in week 1, caught 4 of 6 targets. You could do a lot worse. And he lets you load up on these big names and great matchups.
Yeah, I honestly did not consider Miller, but he does benefit from the lack of Kevin White. So they got to throw it somewhere. Might as well be Zach Miller. My first love at tight end, in all caps, is Jared Cook. I love me some big implied team totals. That puts me on Jared Cook. The Raiders had the second highest implied team total of the week at 28.75. That's against the Jets team that just allowed 9 targets and a touchdown to Charles Clay. And Cook played 71.2% of the snaps in his Raiders debut, one less play than Michael Crabtree. He caught all 5 of his targets, too. He fits what I want at this position for 5,100. So I won't use both him and Marshawn in the same lineup because it's a touchdown dependent position, but I will have a good amount of exposure to both of those guys. I also want some Kobe Fleener, tentatively. Kobe Fleener's snap rate does scare me to death, but he is still managing to get targets. He barely played half the team's snaps in week one, but he did manage to get six targets. One of those targets was deep down the field, and three of them were in the red zone. Nobody on the current Saints roster had more deep targets than Fleener last year, so I think that he was kind of an under-the-radar benefactor of the Brandon Cooks trade, also benefited from Willie Snead being suspended, so I think there are enough things working in Fleener's favor to use him at 5,300. Brandon, am I dumb for liking Fleener, or is this an okay play?
No, I like Fleener. He was the sixth most efficient tight end, according to Number Fire's metrics, in 2016, despite not really paying off his fantasy potential in 2016, but Fleener definitely makes sense. Another guy, and we just kind of haven't talked about this game much, Zach Ertz at 6,100.
Yeah, without Eric Berry.
Without Eric Berry, that's the thing. He had 8 targets, 8 catches, 93 yards, played 88% of the snaps for Philadelphia in week one. I think I might need to jam in some Zach Ertz. Yeah. Because he just gets fed.
Yeah, that's a fine play too. I think that he's a very high floor guy despite the matchup. So let's move on to the defense now, Brandon. Speaking of high floors, Seattle, big favorites. They're expensive, but it's for a reason.
Yeah, they're 5,400, but I don't care. I mean, defenses can make or break DFS lineups. We saw that in week one. You know, whether we like that or not, that's just the way that it is. And everything is in their favor this week as huge home favorites. Don't love them in tournaments as much because they might be popular, and I don't want popular defenses. But, you know, this also puts Oakland in the mix for me as 14-point home favorites. But I'm probably going to have the most exposure to your defensive love this week.
Yeah, that's the Ravens. I like Oakland, too, and I like Seattle. I think they're both fine plays. But for me, the Ravens are my favorite ones. We talked last week about the Steelers because of DeShone Kizer's affinity for just holding on to the football all day, and they promptly sacked him 7 times, had a big day. Now, Kizer goes on the road, gets to face a Ravens team that just blanked the Bengals in week one. They picked Andy Dalton off 4 times, created 5 turnovers, had 5 sacks, so the Ravens to me are an easy love. They are just 4,700, and I think I think that my max exposure to a defense last week was like 35% to the Rams. I believe it was the Rams. It may have been the Steelers, but I think it was the Rams. I'm probably going to have like 50 to 60% Ravens this week, and I would have more if I didn't like Oakland so much, I guess. Like, just, I love them.
Are there any other defenses if people want to pay down? I think the Chargers.
Yeah, I like the Chargers.
4,300 playing Jay Cutler, 4.5-point home favorites.
Although Joey Bosa may retire after a touchdown Trevor Siemian juked him out of his jock on Monday, so that would be a factor.
Yeah, and the Rams, I don't love them, but they're 4,400 against Washington if you are not sold on the Washington offense.
Yeah, the Chargers game script to me is very interesting, so I don't mind their defense either. So let's close up shop here with kicker Brandon Steven Gostkowski in the Superdome. Kind of appealing.
Yeah, 5,100, but he's at the top of the totem pole in terms of implied team total. He's got a healthy spread in his favor as well, gets the kick in a dome. The same can be said to a lesser extent for Matt Bryan at 4,800. Also, Blair Walsh at 46, 14-point home favorite, implied team total above 28. He's in play as well.
Yeah, I think Walsh will be my main guy. The Chargers kicker, whose name, Young Ho Koo or something, I need to memorize his name, but regardless, he's in play. And then Giorgio Tavecchio for the Raiders. I like my kickers like I like my running backs. Heavily favored and at home. That's what we go with Giorgio Tavecchio, the Raiders, 14-point favorites at home against the Jets. And the Raiders showed faith in this guy last week, letting him kick 4 separate field goals. If I have $4,700 to spend on him, I'm going to plug him in. Brandon mentioned Blair Walsh. I like him. And to a lesser extent, Matt Bryan as well. So I think we're pretty much on the same page here at kicker. But Giorgio, let's go. Light him up, baby. I am totally fine with him for this week. Phil Dawson, too, is interesting. For if you need to go min price, say that extra 100. He is on the road facing the Colts indoors. I'm okay with him as well. That is all we have for this week 2 preview podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. You can find that on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and TuneIn app. Make sure you download the TuneIn app today to get 30 free days of the NFL. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. And you can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. Want to thank you all for tuning in for today. This should be a fun week. A lot of really exciting plays are on the board. Good luck with your lineups, and we'll chat at you again on Monday for the Week 2 Recap Podcast. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.